Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin. There's no Gary Spain this week, but what a guest we have for you as the great Alfie Hale joins us to talk about his footballing life. Don't forget, you can listen to us on a host of audio platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And wherever you listen, make sure you subscribe and turn on the notifications for the podcast so that you know exactly when the new podcasts for the show come out. And share the show on your social media too to spread the word about the history and heritage of Irish football. Now, my guest this week has played for Waterford FC, Doncaster Rovers, Newport County, Aston Villa and more. He has 6 League of Ireland titles, including being top goal scorer in a few of them as well. He's won the League of Ireland as a manager and got Kilkenny City promoted to the Premier Division as champions of the First Division. And I'm delighted that Alfie Hale joins us to talk about his footballing life. Alfie, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm very pleased to be here, Caelan.
I suppose if we kind of go all the way back to maybe the start, where it all began, where do you remember your love of football coming from growing up?
Well, it was easy to be reminded of it. First and foremost, I was raised in an area of supreme horrors, and I was more or less, well, I wasn't, it wasn't me, it was my brothers and I, 3 of them plus myself. We were bred in an area which, as I said, was a total and absolute hurling mad area, and very good hurlers as well. 10 of them actually later appeared in the 1959 All-Ireland final when Waterford won for the first time, I think it was, or the second time. But in that particular area, we had the tremendous hurlers, and but they were very good sportsmen as well in terms of other sports. The local and nearest school to us was the Mount Sion School, and that was a real traditional hurling school. And I didn't attend there, nor my brother Harry. The elder brothers Georgie and Dixie did, but we all moved eventually to De La Salle National School, and actually soccer was encouraged there, and we played it and we joined it, and the first probably organized football that I became involved in, I was 14-15 and playing with what was the local club and family club, St. Joseph's Football Club, and they were run by the Toms family, as it was known, and I was asked at 15 years of age to take over the school by teams. And by way of that, it was basically the gear was handed, thrown at me, said, give that to your mum and get it to do the wash. I'm retiring. That was one of Tom's family. And they were lovely people and they did a great job. But my mother took it over, and it put me in a position where I collected the jerseys. So it was up to me to give out a jersey. And giving out a jersey meant you were playing. The guy who didn't get a jersey wasn't playing. So I became a selector at 15, and I didn't. It's the last thing I wanted to do, because I just loved playing football and I wanted to just concentrate on my own game and enjoy it. But as a means of getting into competitive football, I had to take it over. And for the first couple of years, I was only when I was St. Joseph's Sports, I was only 10, 11 years of age. And me and a neighbour, Greg Clooney, who was still a great pals today, 70-odd years, we organised St. Joseph's school by teams. And from 10, he was 10 and a half, I was 11. And for 4 years, we played under 15, and we got hammered for 3 or 4 of the years. And eventually, we start to grow up like the bigger guys, and we start getting our own back, and we started winning quite a few games. And then we became, between youth football and school football, the dominant team in Waterford. And so that took me into Waterford Football Club, because Waterford Football Club, as the Senior League of Ireland team, every year took about 6 young players from youth football and picked them out, handpicked them to train with the first team that Waterford had. Waterford didn't have a reserve team at that time. So you were brought into what was called the panel. And if you did very well in training and they were serving you in the first team, League of Ireland wise, you might just get to make your debut and whatever. And the ruling was at that time in junior football as well, that if you played and managed to get 15 games in a season for Waterford, you had to then step out of youth football and you couldn't go back and play. So you had to make a decision at the 15 or 13, 14 games played. Am I going to stay here and try and be better and play with the senior players? Or will I enjoy the roof that came through with my pals and just continue playing football just for the love and joy of it? And decision making. And I made that decision with my pal Greg Clooney and Shamey Code, the great Shamey Code, who joined Limerick in his later years. And we stayed on. And it worked out for us because we made our debuts and we impressed some people. And
Your decision to kind of, I suppose, take the decision to go into senior football, was that also influenced by your family connections as well, because your uncles and your brothers had played there too?
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. It seemed to be a natural move to make from our point of view or from the family's point of view, because my eldest brother, Georgie, played with Waterford in the late 40s and the early 50s. And Dixie, who was just a couple of years younger than, was a young, dynamic player in Waterford football, coming after the famous Paddy Cole. And he was automatically taken in at 16 years of age. And he played for the Blues at 16. So it was following in their trend. And ironically, when I did make my debut, within a matter of a couple of games, the one who eventually lost his place was my eldest brother, George. He switched positions around. He was a halfback. But they put Dixie back into a halfback, who was an inside forward. And I took Dixie's place and Dixie took George's place. So Georgie decided, in wisdom, he loved music and he was part of a Backstreet concert band locally here, to give his full time to that. And he retired from football at 28. And he had played amateur football for Ireland and he had played junior football for Ireland as well. And so a very competitive player, Georgie, but it was ironic that I should take his place, and things went well for me then.
Did that make the family dinners a little bit more awkward?
In the least, no. Georgie was delighted for me, and all the family were delighted. Basically, Georgie and Harry was next to me. The eldest was Georgie. Dixie came next. Harry was next, and then I was the youngest. Georgie and Harry were known as the Douchantman pass players. They were defenders, and they had no time for the dribbling with the ball and beating players. But Dixie and I were the forward players, of the creative type of players in football, and the ones who scored the goals. So we got all the glory and they got all the hard work to do. And but that was the name of the game everywhere. And so Georgie retired and I came in, and Harry had played and Harry had done well, and he had got a schoolboy cap. He's the only one in the family who got a schoolboy cap, and he was a centre back. But in the moment that Georgie actually decided he was retiring, it was on an Easter weekend. And of that Easter weekend, the Waterford Football Club decided that Peter Fitzgerald and I, famous Peter Fitzgerald, went to Leeds United, and he retired with a very serious back injury and lost out on all the glory days that Blues had. But Peter and I made our debut on a Sunday, Easter Sunday, against Bohemians of Dublin. And we beat him 4-2. And I scored 2 and Peter scored 1. And the following day, the Munster Cup final was in Cork in the Mardyke. And we're Waterford to play our green. So the selectors at the time, and there were selectors, 10 directors, I think, decided that because I got 2 goals and Peter got 1, they'd play me and Peter would be left as a substitute. And the substitute wouldn't use their time unless that somebody fell out before the match actually started. So because I scored the two and Peter got the one, I got the nod to play. And I played in it, and it went very well for me because we beat Evergreen 5-3 in the Marley, and I scored a hat-trick in that one. So I got 5 goals in the 2 days playing for the Blues, and I saw it the rest of the season, which was near the end of it anyway, with the Blues scoring a few goals. And then it was the start of the following season where Waterford decided to bring in a professional manager. And that was a man called Alex Stevens from, he was a former player with Glasgow Rangers, believe it or not. Mm. And he also played for Everton, and which led to other connections for me further on down the line. But he came in, and I wasn't sure whether he wanted me to play or not. So he came to see me play in what was supposed to be a charity game in a place called Oger Park, which is legendary to Waterford football. Anybody who's ever played there came through, you really knew who they were, whether they're going to make it or not. And I played in the game there, and he approached me afterwards and asked me to come and join him with the Blues. And I thought about it and said, yeah, of course I will, yeah. So I came, and he saw me play, and he said, I can't put you in the team because basically we've started off with the professionals, and I want to see them, and I want the role of you are, and I need to see you. So he said, just be a little bit patient. And I was patient, and eventually then a lad called Jack Hunt, fullback, terrific fullback, reported on a Sunday morning for a game in Dublin against St. Pat's. And I was the 12th man. At that stage, the 12th man was the non-playable. So if somebody cried off before the game started, you went in. And basically, that was it. But if they started out the game, reduced to 10 men through injuries or anything else, you just had to see it out, play it out with 10 men. And the only sub that you brought on the coach didn't play. But what happened in that particular game is that we went to Dublin, and 3/4 way we got to Nace, got out of the bus, and Jack Hunt was feeling very, very unwell. And he came and said to me, I'm crying off today. I won't be able to play. Before he spoke to the manager. So I said, well, that's fine with me, but I've got to be told I'm playing. And we got back on the bus, and Alex Stevenson, the manager, yeah, he came to me and said, look, you're in, Jack Hunt is out. And I said, I've never played fullback. And he said, no, you're not playing fullback. He said, but your brother Dixie is. Now, Dixie had gone from inside forward to midfield and a dynamic midfield, which he was in his later career and everything else. But Dixie went in at fullback, and somebody else dropped in at halfback, and I came into the inside forward position. But all of that because Jack Hunt, unfortunately, was so sick he just couldn't play. And but it was my opportunity now for Alex Stevenson to see me as a professional. And we beat St. Pat's in Dublin 7-1, and I scored 2. And he was pleased with that. But the following week, he came to me and then said, look, the senior lads have been doing well. Jack Hunt's doing very well. I can't leave him out. And they were going on to win the Shield. They'd only had 2 games to go to win the Shield. And he said, I've got to leave you out. But he said, you will be back. And I said, that's fine with me. And I went to look at the game. And the following game, they won. And I think it was the game after, or that particular game, it was decided they won the Shield, which was a first round of the league series before the league itself opened up. Mm. And Waterford won that. And it was one of the big trophies for, that to come. But having said that, in fairness, Alex Stevenson was good to his word. Within a matter of 2 or 3 games, he decided to put me in. But he put me in then at outside left, which is wide on the left wing. Now, everybody understood that from the point of view of the, if you've ever seen a photograph, and I've only seen them lately myself, of me in the photograph of the team. I was like a 12-year-old with a lot of strong, heavyweight gentleman in the team photograph. So he decided to give me some protection. He'd play me on the wing, get out of the way. So I played on the wing. I never played there before. But I finished the season anyway, scoring 23 goals from outside left, which wingers weren't supposed to do. Mm. And in a matter of time, then I was getting stronger, more confident in myself, and he was getting more confidence in me, this Alex Stevenson. And he put me inside forward. So I went inside forward and maintained the goal scoring rate and doing very well. We got into the cup semi-final and the cup final. And we were to play Pats against St. Pats. And there's a lad called Tommy Dunn there, played midfield, and he's a very good player. He had a brother, Jimmy Dunn, who came back from it, played in the St. Pat's team. And we were due to play St. Pat's in a midweek game that had been abandoned or had been postponed early in the season on a Wednesday, 10 days before the cup final. And Alex Stevenson came to me and he said, look, I want to give you a rest as a youngster, or I'm thinking of giving it to Jack Fitzgerald, who's now in his early 30s. And Jack was a terrific player. He was a full international. I need to rest one of you, of the two, which we worked really well together in the midweek game against Pats, the league game, which didn't count for anything. And I said, I'd play. It doesn't make to me. I was a young fella. I just wanted to play every day. So we play and Jack didn't. And unfortunately, I got an injury in a tackle with Tommy Dunn. And Tommy Dunn to this day doesn't talk to me. And I met him recently very annoyed because he just told me to F off, sort of, when I went over to say hello. And I thought he was a terrific player. And this was that a dude. I'm jumping forward now 40, 50 years. And but anyway, in that particular league match on the Wednesday, I went into a tackle with Tommy Dunn and I was useless at protecting myself in terms of how to do it. And I left myself wide open for an injury, and I got an injury, and it wasn't his fault. It was my fault. But anyway, that injury kept me out of football for practically a season. I was in plaster cast from my ankle to my thigh, and I just couldn't do anything. I was immobilized for at least 6 months, and then to try and get back into walking, running, and then kicking a ball. It was a long, long time. I made it.
Was there a part of you that maybe thought that that was the end of the career, maybe? Because that's a pretty horrific injury to get.
Well, I was told by the doctor who was very good at those type of injuries and how to deal with them. And he said to me, this is a very serious injury, a very serious one, and this is why I'm wrapping you up in plaster, to stop you doing anything hurriedly or trying to get back and whatever. And he said, you've just got to be disciplined, very disciplined, and rested as much as you possibly can. And I had no choice being in plaster that, but when I came out of the plaster, it was basically then not trying to do something too quickly. And you're watching people playing football and you want to be out there. And it was tough going. And it was a very serious injury. But the funny thing about it is basically is that Dr. O'Driscoll, and he's a famous man in London as well, he proved to be right. He said, if you get this right, that leg will be stronger than your other leg. And you will get the results in years to come. But if you ignore my advice, he said, you will be finished playing football within 6 months. I took his advice and I've been stronger ever since. What it did happen to me in my later career was that I got the other leg done in the same situation, a knee injury, and cruciate, as they now call it. Mm. And I recovered from that, from the same thing. But it was a long time for me. Like, days were long, weeks were very long, and when you're into a year out of football, you didn't start to doubt yourself whether you'd be able to play or not. But I came back, and because of the fitness level that I reached, I felt very strong. And after a few games with competitive games, I felt very confident in I could do it again, and I did. So, I mean, there was a lot of lads of my age group then didn't get the attention I got and didn't give the attention to the injuries they got as well. That finished their careers very, very early. So, I mean, I've been known as Lucky Alfie. As far as I'm concerned, I'm Lucky Alfie anyway, for many years. And my physical fitness approach to things has stood to me even to now. I mean, I'm 85 in, years of age. I don't feel it.
You're still playing golf?
Oh, yeah, three times a week. We don't play. We sometimes play 18 holes, but mainly play 13 or 14 holes. And that's nearly as competitive as the cup final against Tommy Dunn.
Golfers are very competitive.
Yeah, it is. It's a game for the head as well, too. Very psychological.
True, and,
so I'm more attached.
So you score 21 goals and 34 appearances for Waterford from 58 to 60. Is that kind of goal scoring record that gets you the attention of English clubs?
Well, what got my attention was, first and foremost, the goals that I got for Waterford. And the result of that was I was picked for the Irish amateurs in what was Olympic Games qualifiers. And we played the UK, England in that. And actually, UK was the UK. We played them in Daly Mount, and we played Holland, which was Johan Cruyff's era. And they were a Dutch team, a brilliant Holland Dutch team. And we played them in Dublin. And in the Dutch game, I scored a hat trick. And Joe Mercer had come over to see that, because Joe Mercer was captain of England in his day, but retired with injuries. He was great friends with Alex Stevenson, the aforementioned Alex Stevenson, who played together. And Alex Stevenson said, come and watch this young lad. And Joe Mercer did, and I got a hat trick against the Dutch team. And a month later, that was an amateur international. I was picked for the professionals League of Ireland team to play a German, the Hessian League, to play them in Daly Mount. And we played them in Daly Mount, and I scored a hat trick in that one. And Joe Mercer was over to see that one as well. So things were going very well. I mean, I was the only amateur in that team. And in actual fact, there's a lot of irony in this. In that game against the Germans, after scoring a hat-trick, afterwards, all of the players in the dressing room were handed a brown envelope with a fee in for playing the match. And I don't know what it was, 10, 20 pounds or something like that. A lot of money in the 50s anyway. And the secretary of the FA came to me and handed me the envelope. I said, I can't take that. And he said, why not? And I said, I'm an amateur. I can't take it. And the lads were listening to this and said, go on, it doesn't make a difference. Who cares? Whatever. No, I said, I can't do that. And I've never told a story to anybody before. And said, no, I can't take that. I know my father wouldn't wish it, because he's the one who always said to me, look, stay amateur and be free to make your own decisions and whatever. No, I can't do that, basically. They said, nobody will know. And I said, I'll know, and my father will know. So I don't want it. And so I gave it back to him, and he took it back there. But anyway, within a fortnight, there was in the post, the local post office, the postman, the Arrow postman, came whistling to the door, knocked on the door in my house. My mum opened the door. She said, there's a little parcel here for you. And there's a little parcel from the postman. So I said, what is this? I didn't know. And it opened, there was a little box. And in that little box was a beautiful gold medal from the FAI. And that medal has meant an awful lot to me since. And there's a museum in Morford, the Sports Museum, and it's down there. And with some other stuff that I've given, which they asked for.
So and did they give you, was the medal basically because you didn't take the money, but they wanted you to have something that represents that moment?
Yeah, I think it was they wanted the fact that I scored a hat trick and that I made a big impression on the game, sort of thing, from their point of view, and to come away without any recognition. So I think it was a recognition of just for me to remember and to appreciate. So, no, the FAI reckon that they didn't understand why the distinction between an amateur and a professional, because they had just, you know, they knew I was an amateur, but they didn't mull over it or whatever. And in situations like that, taxes weren't even concerned the tax people as to what was going on in that. But anyway, that was one of the nice things that happened anyway.
So where does Aston Villa come in then? Where does the opportunity for that come from?
Yeah, Aston Villa, Joe Mercer had come over to see me play against the Dutch and scored a hat-trick. And that was a League of Ireland team, but it was a League of Ireland team of picked amateurs from their clubs. The match against the Hessian League, Germany, was all professionals, supposedly. But I was an amateur, and they had a trials with the amateurs and professionals before the game came up. And they decided to pick me out of the amateurs for the professional team. And that's where basically Joe Mercer had come to see the amateur game against Holland. And then he heard that I'd been picked for the professional team against the Hessian League on St. Patrick's Day in 1957 or something, or 59. I don't know what it was. But basically, he came to see that again, and I got a hat-trick again. So we were coming towards the end of the season anyway, and Joe Mercer decided he wanted to make a bid for me, which he did before. And at the end of the day, basically, he wanted to sign me, and Alex Stevens said, look, Joe Mercer wants to sign you, and he said the club have to sit down and agree a deal with you. And my father said to who came in on the discussion, said, well, why are they discussing Alfie's position without Alfie being there? And Alfie is an amateur. Now, I could have walked away and said to Aston Villa, if you need to deal with me on a professional, you can deal with me on a professional basis. And I can then sign, because I was an amateur, I was free to do anything that I wanted to do. If Waterford had paid me for a professional fee for a match day every week, well, then they have every right to negotiate the deal anyway. So there was a lot of rigmarole about this. And eventually, my father said, look, young lad, that's all he called me, young lad. If you want to walk away and do your own thing with Aston Villa, you can do it. But he said, Waterford have given you a great opportunity through Alex Stevenson. And you've got to honour that and repay it. And he said, I think you should sign now. Whatever they agreed to give you and whatever they agreed to take themselves from the fee that Aston Villa would pay, just accept it. Because basically the opportunity has come through Waterford and you've got to respect that. And I said, well, okay, Dad, whatever you say, right, that's fine. And I did that. And I could have walked away. And the thing about it was that they gave me a sign-on fee. And later, long and behold, which the revenue decided to pick up on it later in later years, which is another day's story. But anyway, the money never mattered to me, in all fairness. And I mean, I played for Waterford from 1957 to 1960, excepting the injury time, as amateur, and I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the freedom of being an amateur. And the money never meant anything to me. Money never meant anything to me ever in my life. And it doesn't to this day. And people say, Now, having said that, I've explained to them, you can't live without money. So basically, you got to be practical. And I remember a priest said to me one day, a good friend of mine, we grew up together. He played for Waterford. Shea Cullen was his name. And I said to him, you know, where am I going with this thing? He said, Alfie, he said, look, you get to the stage now where you're courting, now you're going to get married soon. And if anybody puts sense into your head, it'll be a woman. And basically, they'll tell you a wage has to come through the door.
Absolutely.
So I'm probably going in different directions with you here and jumping ahead, but it's only as it's coming to mind when you ask me a question. And sometimes I'm thinking when I'm 17, other times I think when I'm 77. But I signed for the Villa then, but I didn't want to go. And But I felt, and my father said to me, if you don't go, you're leaving down your family club, St. Joseph's, you're leaving down Waterford, you're leaving down the lads you played for in the factory, which I did, which was a nearby factory, and a good soccer team there. And
but you'd earned that move through your ability and your skill as well. So you kind of, I suppose, you owed it to yourself a little bit too, to see if you could take on that new challenge. Your time in England with Aston Villa and Doncaster, what happens at Aston Villa? Because you didn't have that many appearances for them, and then you moved on to Doncaster.
First of all, with Aston Villa, I told them I don't want to sign. And when they asked me to come over and look at the stadium and bring my father with me. My father had never flown before. Now, he had played for Shamrock Rovers selection in New York, but they'd gone by boat. And that was in the 30s when he played with Waterford and then Shamrock Rovers later on. But he was asked to come over with me and look at them and whether they're impressed or not by the situation. And we went over, and I said, it's a fantastic stadium, Pop, and they have everything they want, except in football terms. But I don't like it. I had a nice job at home. I was on a shift worker. I used to go football training. When I was on a late train, I go football training in the morning. If I was on an early shift, I go train at night time. I went in the Tramore, County War, Tramore, in the Sandhills in Tramore, where Herb Elliott, not where he went, but he Herb Elliott was an Olympic runner of the 50, and he was in the Ronnie Delaney time, and he won a gold medal, and he put it down to running in the Sandhills for stamina and strength and everything else. And I took him up on that, and I went into the Waterford Sandhills in Tramore, and I was forced to go down there and to organise training methods for lads that played squash with me and played different sports with me, and we just gathered lads, and to this day they all remember. But I absolutely loved Tramore and swimming there, playing football on the beach, and I loved the whole thing about Ireland. Now, having said that, League of Ireland football was always on a Sunday, but when I went to England, as I proved afterwards, nothing was done on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Nothing was a car wash day. That's all you did, is the parents went out and the neighbours hardly spoke to each other. And I lived next door to a neighbour for 3 years in Doncaster, and I never knew who they were. And somebody said, it's become a situation in Ireland like that now. Mm. But you just want to know. And I wasn't a nosy type of guy, a very quiet guy, but it would have been nice to have some sort of friends that you would say they are friends. And the players that I played with, I'm jumping ahead now, Keelan, is basically that they wrapped up, had their showers, and off they went, and that was it. Now, you could call me a crybaby, you could call me anything you like. But I found Sundays there in England were a torture, an absolute torture. I used to sing that song, Sunday morning coming down, and the loneliness of it. Now, the loneliness of the week. You would be too young to know Liam Whelan that died in the Manchester air crash, right? He's the Dublin lad. Mm-hmm. And his only, won't say objection, but the only thing he disliked and didn't really want is when he played with Manchester United, with the training in the morning from 10 o'clock until 12:30. After 12:30, the day was yours. And you had nothing except boredom to look forward to. And Liam was to get married 3 months later, hopefully that he was settled down with his wife, a young Dublin girl, and it never happened. But he, on the day the plane crashed, he asked Busby, he wasn't playing in the game that was the following day that they were flying out for, could he opt out and go back to Dublin for the couple of days free? And Busby said to him, no, he said, we still have a risk. Somebody may not be fully fit, so you have to be on standby. And Liam was after scoring a huge amount of goals, and he was the top goal scorer. And the guy who was replacing him was the one and only Bobby Charlton. And Liam went there, and he had the loneliness in him. He loved his football, and he was able to put it aside, and he looked forward to getting married. I couldn't do that. Sis, my wife now, came over to stay with me. She stayed about 2 miles up the road. She got a job in Birmingham. And in all fairness, both of us were just as lonely for Ireland as one on their own would be. So it didn't solve anything. And I can't describe the situation in Aston Villa without being accused of being babyish or not liking it. I eventually left Aston Villa because I said to Joe, I signed for him basically, and I said, my father wants it, they all want it, so I'll do it. But when I left Aston Villa, basically it was because I was supposed to, called up for the squad to go to, which was 14, 15 players at that time, to London to play against Tottenham Hotspurs. I had played against Tottenham Hotspurs at an earlier stage in the year. And this was the return in London. And there's an awful lot of Irish people and Waterford people in London that would like to have seen me play. And I said, to Joe Mercer called me into his office, said, you're in the squad for London for Spurs on Saturday. Get yourself ready. And I said, no, I don't want to go. And he said, what do you mean you're not running? I don't want to go, I said. And he said, you don't want to play against one of the best teams in the world. Not in England, not in Europe, in the world. The double team, Danny Blanchard, Dave McKay, you don't want to play. No, I said, I don't want to play. He said, why don't you want to play? I said, these guys wouldn't even talk to you. There was two or three more brilliant guys. But there was, for every guy, there was three or four guys didn't want to know the Irish guy, didn't want to, you're a threat to their position. And maybe I was being childish. But I said, I'm not going to sit in the bus for 3 hours going to London and guys ignoring you. Which they did, and I'm writing a book at the moment. When I'm not writing it, there's a guy writing it for me, a lovely guy, Dermot Keyes in there. And I explained to him, you know, the situation. I said, I want to enjoy football. I'd rather play here with the Central League side, the reserve team. And the younger lads were trying to get in the team. I have no interest in being in the team, but I like playing with them. But unfortunately, at the weekend, they go home as well, to different parts of Birmingham and outside Birmingham into the Midlands, and you don't see him, and you're left on your tot. And I said, I don't expect people that cry in tears for me now or feeling lonely, but I don't want to bloody well be here. No, and that's the way I'm talking now, but I was too quiet to say that then. I mean, I remember playing, the team hadn't scored a goal for weeks, and we were playing Fulham in the Cup against Johnny Haynes' team or somebody, I think it was. Well, it could have been Huddersfield. And I scored a goal. And we won the match. Luckily, we won the match. And after the game, I said, is anybody going for a drink or whatever? Now, I don't drink. I'd be given the impression that I'm an alcoholic. And I'm the only one in the family that couldn't drink. I should take two bottles of something or I'd get sick. But have a chat. And no, they're all off. The marriage of the wives and blah, 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 and whatever. And you read it all in the book anyway. Anyway, sorry.
So,
go on.
So you were unhappy at Aston Villa. So what happens then for you to go to get to Doncaster, and seemingly you stayed there for three seasons. So were you happy there? Was it a change of dressing room, a change of attitudes that perhaps helped you?
No, well, I have to say, Caelan, there's nobody going to buy this book. Because you're going to tell it all to you. Anyway, so, sorry, I'm only messing with you. Caelan, that explain exactly what went on. When Aston Villa, when I told Mr. Joe Mercer that I didn't want to play, and I'm not going to Spurs, I'd rather play in the Central League side. He took me up the water and said, right, he said, you'll regret that, blah, blah, blah. Later on, then he put me on the transfer list. And I said, there's no point in putting me on the transfer list because I want to go home, right? And I want to go home. Sounds very childish. But anyway, he said, look, he said, you've got to make your mind up what you really want to do. And I said, well, what I want to do is I don't want to stay with Aston Villa. So I went home in the summertime. And we had been married, sis myself, at that stage, and she was pregnant with Darryl, our eldest son. And She, we were married a year and a half, I think, at that stage. And I said, no, I'm going home. And that's it. So he called me up before the end of the season and said, we're going to Russia and I want you to come in the squad. And I said, well, I can't be too bloody awkward. And he said, I need you to come. He said, I need you to really look at yourself in the world and everything else. And Peter McPowell, another Irish lad, he said, yeah, you better come, Matt. He said, for heaven's sake, don't throw it all away now. So I went to Russia with and I played. We played three games in unbelievable heat, and I played in two of them. I went to Russia, and I came home, and I didn't speak to Joe Mercer in between terms of when I came back home or whatever. And I approached the World Football Club about saying that I'm coming home, and if I can get a job, I'm not going back, and that's it. So they came back after me and said, look, we want to put it on the line. If we ask you back, we'll have to pay the money back to Charlotte, back to Aston Villa. And secondly, we don't have any money and we can't buy any. And Waterford at that stage, if you look through the years, was in their worst position they've ever been. Mm. In that year, they were told by the League of Ireland legislators that book yourselves up or you'd find yourselves out of League of Ireland football.
Pull yourself
but,
up.
The secretary said to me, we don't have any money, we can't do anything, and Aston Villa hold your registration and they're certainly not going to let you go. So I was forced to go back because I got a letter then saying that I would not be in a position to play with anybody. As a professional player, you're on the contract with Aston Villa and you cannot play football, even amateur football. You will not be allowed. So I tried to brazen it out because I was home for the close season. And I missed the start of the pre-season in Aston Villa, telling them I'm definitely not going back. But as we got into the season starting, and nothing happened with Waterford, and a couple of League of Ireland clubs had come in the meantime, Sean McGovern and somebody else, to ask me, would we join them? And I said, I have absolutely no interest in joining anybody except Waterford. And I want to get a job in Waterford. And I want to get away from professional football. But anyway, Joe Mercer decided that maybe the trip to Russia would change his mind. But it didn't. And anyway, I came home and I wrote him and said, I'm not coming back. And he got the secretary right back and said, you are coming back because you have nowhere to go. And within a matter of 3 or 4 weeks, he was right. So I came back. But in the meantime, Doncaster, Southampton, and some other clubs had come in for me. And Doncaster, the reason I looked at it, is that the manager, when I was only 16, had come over to St. Dixie for a non-league club in England. Oscar Old was his name. And he had come from England for a non-league club to pick up Dixie. And he had heard about Dixie being a very good player, blah, blah, blah. And he wanted me to sign. And I said, I'm not going to Doncaster. And one of the lads said to me at home, she's not doing anything here. And she was right. I was going down Tramore on my own and walking around with a ball and then doing a bit of jogging and swimming, whatever. And so he said, the Doncaster Rovers manager, Hole, said, also Hole said to me, or said over the phone, look, come over, have a look at the ground, have a look at the situation and see what it is. And I said, look, I'm not going anywhere because Aston Villa are not going to let me go anywhere. And he said, look, let me talk to Aston Villa first. And I said, I don't want to go. So in popped Sis, my wife, and she said, you're not going? No, I'm not. And she said that there's a lovely house there after telling you can have. And I said, yeah, it's lovely house. And it's on the race course. Oh, my. And Joe Simon, the jockey, is our next door neighbor. He's the jockey himself and Lester Pickett paddled around together. They were great pals. And I knew nothing about horse racing. My father now loved it. No, he wanted his tips from whatever. So I said, and she said to me, oh, come on, we'll go over. They were flying us over anyway, all expenses looked after and everything else. So I said, flip it in the middle of the summer, we'll go over. We went over to have a look anyway. Next we saw, they brought us down to see the football pitch, and it was genuine thing to stay. It had one of the best pitches in the country. And it was absolutely gorgeous. Now, the ground mightn't have been the best, but the pitch was fantastic. And there's a certain director, was one of the three best in all the four divisions in England, which makes up about 80 clubs. Anyway, it looked very well. And then they took us to see the house. And Sis is tugging me, this looks lovely. I said, I want to live here in Doncaster. But anyway, they brought us back to the boardroom and the chairman was there. He said, look, our manager wants you to sign. We want you to sign. We've had many Irish people play here. Johnny Joyce's uncle was here. The famous Peter Doherty was here. Harry Gregg, who joined Manchester United as the goalkeeper, was here. And they all did very well in their careers. And we want to bring the best out of you and bring the best out of Doncaster, blah, blah, blah. And anyway, he said, yeah, and he hands me a brown envelope. And I said, what's in that? He said, that's your signed entry. I said, what's that? This the maximum wage had already been taken out 3 months before that, so you could negotiate your own contract. And he said, that'll be your signed entry. And I said, I don't want to know anything about that. And I said, Aston Villa, that's Aston Villa. Aston Villa know about it, he said. And they said that, they said, how you deal with him is basically your business. And I said, I don't want that. And I said, I need to go home anyway and think about it and talk to my father about it, whatever. But in this situation, don't want it. And the chairman said, well, look, the offer's on the table now. Take it. He said, I'm guaranteeing you this is the best move you make. And they offered me £45 a week. And Manchester United lads and Liverpool lads were getting £35 a week. This is in the new contracts with the maximum wage gone. And he offered me £45 a week. And I said, sis, what do you think? And she said, I love the house. See? And so what did I do? I signed anyway. So that led to so the people say I'm a hypocrite. And I am a hypocrite. I signed for him. And I did well for him. But I think it swung it in the end, which is basically... I don't really want to talk about it, which is that my brother Dixie had been, he joined the club up in the north, it was the basement barrel. So. But he had an only son and he was killed in an accident, the child. And Dixie rang me about it and he had to ring a Doncaster official who was a neighbour, who was the only man in the street had a phone. And the phone call was very, very sad. And it's very hard to talk about it. But Dixie wanted me to go to Barrow, where the club was. And he had been playing with the club, Workington and Watford. I think it was before or after. And he couldn't talk, really. And I said, I'd be with you. So we were to play in Brighton the next day. And I went to see the manager, Oscar Hold. And he said, I'm busy. I said, I need to talk to you. And he didn't want to talk. So when I told him the situation, he said, you're not going anywhere except to Brighton. You'll be on that bus in the morning. He said, your contract, he said, will be cancelled. I said, I hope you would say that. And he said, it won't be cancelled. He said, because you won't play football again. I said, do you realise what you're talking? I said, this is my brother here. I said, and we're talking about his son. I said, in the kill in the next, and he needs me there. And they're coming over from Ireland. They're able to go from Ireland to Barrow, North Lancashire. And I'm here in Yorkshire, and you won't let me go. I'm telling you, he said, you'll be on that bus in the morning, right? Or you'll never play football again. So I went to see the chairman, and the chairman says, I'm sorry, Alfie. You know, troubles, but the manager is the manager, and I can't do anything about it. So, regretfully, I went to Brighton, and I don't know how we got on. I went through a daze anyway. That when I got back to Doncaster on the Sunday morning, I went in to see him, and he was meeting his coaches. And he said, yeah, here's this fella, again, sort of a nuisance. And I was very quiet then. Not now. I remember years when I 25, 35 years of age, my father says, there's a time comes in your life when you have to stand up for yourself and tell people what you really think. It's called moral courage. And I think I have a lot of it. I think I always had it, but I'm never sure of it. With him, yeah, he's with the coaches. And I said, I'm going to my brother's funeral of the young lad. And he said, you're not going anywhere. I said, look, I said, I've just made up my mind. I'm going, and you can do what you like. So I went and met up with the family and met up with my mother and the lads who came over from Waterford. And they think they traveled all that way to be there. And I was only a few miles down the road in Yorkshire. It was just disgusting in my view anyway. And I'm sorry I was too quiet to kick up too much of a dust about it. But I said, yeah, I'll never play with Doncaster again. So what happened is that I didn't play when I came back initially. And I'd been top scorer at the time. And within a few months, I think it was, drifting anyway, Oscar Hoad was sacked. And they brought in a man called Bill Leavers, an ex-player of Manchester City, who I played against. And he said to me, he called me and said, look, I have a dilemma here, Alfie. He said, you're on the transfer list. And he said, I can't play when you're on the transfer list because you don't want to be here. And this goes with every manager. And he was right. He said, I can't play. And I said, well, that's the story. I said, and I said, all I'm asking you is let me know when somebody comes in. Well, that's no bloody good to me. He said, basically, I need to get my team organized. I need you to be in it when I need you to want to play. So I said, well, look, I can't change your routine. Well, that's okay, he said, but I'm playing you next week, and that's it. Now get your boots on and let's stop there. And I came back into the team, but he knew I wasn't happy. And I did well for him as much as I could because he's a nice man as well. And I said, I'm going home. This is my last season. And at the end of the season. And he said, you've said that before. Yeah, I said, I have, yeah. But I said, not in a situation like this. So what happened in the meantime is because he knew I was going, he organized a deal with Newport County man called Billy Lucas. Brilliant man. And Billy wanted me to sign. And the only thing got me to sign is he was nearer to Waterford than Doncaster was. And they were both fourth division teams. And Billy Lucas was great friends with a man called Jimmy Murphy, the Manchester United assistant manager to Matt Busby. And they were both of the same school. They wanted players play it hard, play it fair, play and do the simple things and do it well. And he was great for me, and he asked me to be player coach there when I moved on in the season. But I said to him, look, Billy, I'm signing for a year, but I'm going home. And he said, I'll change your mind, brother. You won't change my mind, Billy. I've made up my mind, I'm going home. After Doncaster, I'm going home. Now, he sold his best player to Doncaster. And he was a very good player. He signed for Sheffield Wednesday after somebody else. And he and I were great friends. I can't think of his name right now. And terrific player. But it was a swap deal. And I went to him, Billy Lucas. And I said, why did you sign me? And he said, well, I've seen you play quite a bit in Bristol and places like that, whatever. And I always had my eye on you. He said, and the opportunity came, he said. And I sold my leading goal scorer for you, he said, you know. And I said, yeah, that sounds funny like you. But I left it go. But the guy who I'm talking about, the other guy he swapped me for, he was a big centre forward, and he went to Doncaster, and he moved up divisions from there on. He and I were good pals then, and I can't think of his name. And he came to me one day when I was down in Newport and went off for a cup of coffee somewhere and talked, whatever. And he said, how are you settling with Billy? I said, I think he's great to work. And he got a lot out of me. And I said, how are you getting on with Doncaster? I don't like it, he said. But he said, I'm looking for a move on. And he said to me, you know Billy Lucas? He said, he was a great player in his own day, and he knows the game inside out. And I said, I know that. I said, why did you swap? you for me then, I said, you know, if you know the game and you've gone up a division and I'm in. And he said to me, well, I'll tell you a good one. I went to say goodbye to him. He said, we all sat down, had a drink with all the players. And we asked Billy, he said, what's his thoughts on the past with him, the player? And he said that Billy stood up, and he was only 5'7" like myself. And he stood up and he said, I'm delighted to be here now. And I'm delighted to say off, Jimmy. I'm delighted to say off Jimmy to Doncaster, he said. And he said, it's the best deal I've ever done in football. And Jimmy went over to him after. He's telling me this himself. Jimmy was telling me this. And he said, I went over and said, Billy, he said, now that I'm gone to the place, said, thanks very much for the compliment you paid me just there. And Billy says, what do you mean? He said, well, you just said, he said, it's the best deal you've ever done. He said, I got the Irishman, he said. And I got the best team. And the guy you're talking was laughing his socks off. He's lovely, lad. And he did, and he had a great career afterwards. I forget his name right now. But Billy Lucas was great to me. And at the end of the day, I said, I'm going home, Billy. The season's ended. Yeah. And I was leading goal scorer. Mm. And who was the leading goal scorer before me in the same team was a lad called Kenny Morgans. And he was in the Man United air crash as well. And Kenny was a lovely lad. And I took over from him as leading goal scorer. He was a bit upset about it first, but then, like everything else, we became very good friends. We got closer together rather than falling apart. And Kenny died a few years ago. He's a lovely lad, but he never recovered really from the Man United air crash, even though he still did well for Newport, whatever. But Billy Lucas was great. Billy asked me to stay on as coach and player coach. And he knew Sis, my wife, was into, she loved horses and ponies and all that sort of stuff. And his daughter had a pony, and he brought it down and he said, I give you my daughter's pony if you get your husband to stay.
So it's literally horse trading.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so actually I could talk to you all night about that. But I came home then in Waterford, basically, said, what do you want to sign? Because they have to pay a fee from, according to them, there's a record fee. I don't know what. They have to pay a fee to Newport. And I said, they had six professionals on the books. They had decided they were going to change everything as far as the League of Ireland was concerned. I said, I don't want to be a full-time professional. I said, you get me a job and I sign any contract you have for me. So they did. And I signed a part-time, the same with all the other local lads and whatever. And I got a job with a van salesman. And the first few months were rough and whatever. Everything turned out well in the end.
Well, that's it for part one of our chat with Alfie Hale. Next week, you can listen to part two as we talk about that amazing Waterford FC side that won six league titles in 8 seasons, plus Alfie's managerial career too. So join us again for that. Don't forget, you can listen to us on a host of audio platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Wherever you listen, make sure to subscribe and turn on your notifications for the podcast so that you know exactly when the new podcasts are out. And share the show on your social media too to spread the word about the history and heritage of Irish football. And remember, to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League side. It's our heritage, it's our game. Till next week, bye for now.